Okay, some of you may have noticed that we have had a cancellation. Travis Gregg was not able to be here. We're very fortunate, though. His shoes will be ably filled by Dave and Julian Gray from NPR, who has joined us at last minute, and I'm very grateful to David for coming, and I'm very excited to hear what he has to tell us. David Julian Gray currently serves as the senior architect for content production at National Public Radio, designing and implementing audio production systems. Previously, he worked at Sonic Solutions, first as manager of customer services and software QA, later as product manager for audio post-production. He began his career as a musician and musicologist, instrumental in the revival of the Eastern European klezmer tradition. It was his research into early 20th century klezmer music which led to his current work in production workflow and audio preservation. Let's welcome David Julian Gray.
Thank you very much. Because I didn't have as much time to prepare, you should never apologize, but because I didn't have quite as much time to prepare as I might have wanted, I will have a lot of pictures that I'll look at. I don't necessarily have, well, that's not my presentation, that's somebody else's. Now, there we go, I got mine.
Got it.
I do not necessarily have every slide I might have wanted. So I'll talk about things that might have been more effective shown, but it'll be fine. All right, just one moment. Need a quick correction, and then we're good. Delete. Where's the delete key? Okay, that's better. Okay.
Mine's still showing. I just want to make sure it just comes up.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
All right, let's...
go ahead and hit from beginning, see if it just steals the show there.
Where would that be? Slideshow.
Yep, from beginning. There you go.
There we go. Okay, I wish I could see the screen a little better as well. All right, so the title of the session is Perfection versus Reality, and I think the best title for my presentation is Reality versus Perfection. The original Travis Gregg's presentation, as I read in the program, was about a program that actually got to completion to get their archives in a digital format and to deal with the material that's born digital and have it in a working archive. It's been a long road that we're only partway down at National Public Library to have a real archive and get a preservation. One of the things I can say about National Public Radio, and here's who we are. First of all, if you don't know, we're an internationally acclaimed producer and distributor of non-commercial news, talk, and entertainment programming. We've won over 45, I think maybe over 50 at this point, Peabody Awards. Independent, privately supported, nonprofit membership organization. We have an audience over 26 million in partnership with over 860 independent member stations. NPR.org, our website, is a leading provider of news and information podcasts and a leader in online news. NPR Worldwide is an international distribution via broadcast and cable. We're an industry leader in sound gathering and production, and we have a repository of over 120,000 hours of archived news and cultural programming and over 200,000 hours of raw materials. And relevant to this session, most of that are on mini discs and CDs in reporters' desks. But we're working on fixing that. All right. So there we go. I don't see the same things, but... keep going. So you had your notes? How do I keep moving the slides here so I can see slides? There we go. All right, I'm good. Here's a little workflow that shows our born digital workflow. And the fact that it's born digital in today is largely irrelevant, really, because we're stuck on a karmic wheel of reincarnation. Most material is, as you see nowadays, born digital, and our tool of choice is, that's a picture of a Marantz PMD660, a very nice flash recorder that records to, in David's talk we saw that nice little memory stick, the tiny little thing, and we can get 16-bit 48 kilohertz. And 48 kilohertz is not just for DAT, but it's largely used in broadcasts, so we've been 48 kilohertz for our digital work for a long, long time. Most of that material is gathered in the field, and then it's sent via FTP to our system. We use a Dalit production system, which is an all-digital system. It is immediately converted to MPEG layer 2, MPEG 1 layer 2, at 384 kilobits per second. because when we first built our system, which had to be used by over 350 users to share the audio, we could not find a system that supported completely uncompressed, undata compressed audio. So we used the least amount of data reduction we could with MPEG. And after we used the system for a little while, when we actually could go to full linear, we couldn't afford to because we didn't have the storage, because everybody wants to keep everything forever. And that's another one of our big challenges. How do we give our users the impression that, they can keep everything forever? And I'll talk about that a bit downstream. Then, after we've produced the material, we present it as analog, and we recapture that analog stream. So all of our archival audio and everything we capture for reuse is actually taken from the broadcast analog stream, which we take out of the console, which is an analog console in most of our facilities, and re-encode as MPEG. It goes to the member stations from the public radio satellite system, as mentioned earlier with the classical music, at 256 kilobit per second. And we capture it again ourselves as a linear stream, but it's captured again. And that goes a number of places. The people who produce our website, so all the decimated web audio you hear, is taken from the broadcast stream that was re-encoded into our Dalet system at 16-bit, 48 kilohertz linear. And they script it, and it goes automatically and becomes either MP3 or Windows Media. They also keep the audio that they grabbed from our Dalet system as both the linear files that they took with a new name, a name that references the hour and the show and the day that it came from, and the EDL they used to cut it up into the pieces. So when you go to the website, you can search by content. They're individual pieces, no longer big chunks. We also keep that audio directly out of the system with the Dalet serial number on LTO tape. Here's a process flow. It's not changing. So how do I make it go to the next slide? I'm hitting the space bar.
Yeah. Oh, you left the, I think you left the presentation.
I left the presentation.
But you're still here. It's remarkable. Yeah, I'll try. There you go.
Okay, thank you. This is the same information in a bit more of a process flow. How do I get to see the same slide that I'm showing there? That's not happening. All right, well, we'll deal with it. So this basically is just a way that shows the process flow. It's a very messy situation here where we get the stuff in the field or we record it in-house. When it's gathered in the field, it immediately gets converted from a little watcher at our FTP site to that 384 kilobit per second. When we record it in-house, sometimes it's linear. Most of the time, it's 384 kilobit per second. But by the time it gets ready to be presented to air, it's always 384 kilobit per second, MPEG layer 2. Layer 2 is very nice because it survives transcoding reasonably well, unlike MP3. We don't let anybody give us anything in MP3 because pretty much after one transcoding, when we go, if somebody sends us an MP3 through the FTP site, it also becomes a 384 kilobit per second, 48K MP2, and it doesn't sound nearly as good as it did as an MP3, unfortunately. So MP3, not good for production. There's a little loop there with processing when things are cut up to become final pieces. Then they get presented to air as the analog stream. They get recaptured. Everything's the same here. And there I have a little shelf on the lower right hand that represents our CDs. There's also, I don't think you can see, there was a little red dotted line. You might be able to see that. That goes from the broadcast library. The broadcast library is our archive. It's a text-only system called TechLib. And it only references the CDs that are on the shelf. In this picture, not as clear as the last picture, but I do have the LTO tape. All the material that was presented to air is on LTO tape as 16-bit linear files with serial numbers on them. That's what the Dalet system gives them. They're 8-character hexadecimal numbers dot wave. And in addition to that, on another system, you see the LTO tape, and I have 3 formats. Not a great thing. ArcServe, which we started using when I started keeping everything forever, 2002. We later switched to Veritas, which is another archival format, and now we're using Tivoli Storage Manager, an IBM process. I've successfully shown that I can read the ArcServe tapes in Tivoli. In Veritas, I have not yet tried to read the ArcServe or Veritas tapes in Tivoli. We also store, just as files in the Unix NFS file system, the same files, except now they have meaningful names, and the original EDLs. We use SoundForge to cut up the pieces for the website, so those EDLs, and this is a slide I do not have, but you've probably, many of you, I'm sure, have seen what an EDL, edit decision list for a digital audio workstation looks like. Some of them are using XML nowadays, which is very nice. SoundForge, which is what our website uses, just has a listing of the name of the file and the timing in and the length of time that they're being used for each section, which is a very nice little format. Dalit uses XML. We like that very much. It's the same information. It's even better to automate readback of it because then you can always say, take the timing, figure out what the sample rate is, go to the right sample, and reuse it again and again. So one of the things that was not spoken about in depth by either David or Chris who preceded me is the idea that one of the formats that we have to preserve and try to go back to are edit decision lists. It's nice to have just a complete file, and all you have to deal with is the file, but I think Chris mentioned obliquely that there are a lot of Pro Tools sessions. We also have playlists we want to recreate. We have EDLs that would be nice if we could recreate, and it's nice to have those in some kind of format we can reuse. I do want to add... Okay. All right. I just hit the down arrow now? No, it didn't change.
I don't know how it got into that mode.
All right. Well, let's see here. Let's go back slideshow from current slide. There we go. I'll just stick with this. I'd like to add that even though the title is Born Digital, as Dave showed in his presentation. Sometimes we call something born digital that was not really born digital, but it has a digital birth date at some point. And as I originally said, you know, it's almost irrelevant that most of our material nowadays here in the 21st century starts out as a digital file, but eventually it goes through several transcodings. We keep our archival stuff from an analog stream from those digital files. We also have much of those 110,000 hours I mentioned earlier are on tapes or CDs. We started archiving everything to CD in 1995. Everything before that is on quarter-inch two-track tape, which was the accepted audio archival standard for many, many years. Now, of course, the only standard, as Chris said, is constant migration, and I'll get into that as well. So we have a project to take all our old equipment, material that's on tape, and we have a tape rescue project where we are digitizing to CD all those many thousands of hours that we have on audio tape because of the sticky shed problem is the main reason that you want it. So we have a nice convection oven, and we try to get 10 to 16 hours per day. And as we say, we're a production system. Production's our priority. We think our archives and our archival audio has great value, but the priority for our company is on production. So we actually did a project to try to get all the archival stuff into a nice thing and do 2496 and put it into a complete system with great metadata, and that hasn't happened. So it's just CDs with whatever's labeled on the CD. But we do have our broadcast library, which goes back to the early 70s, and that can reference those CDs. So there's no direct link. We just reference the CDs. All right, so I took the non-born digital because it's understood that archival stuff enters as well. So what's wrong with this picture, as if you didn't know? Well, the first one is we have multiple format conversions, including reconversion from analog. That's the main thing. We have multiple databases, and the databases generally have no interaction. We have one database we use for thinking up ideas of what stories we're going to cover. Then once we start doing that, we use another database where people can put their stories together. The audio system from Dalit Systems at this time is yet another database that doesn't talk to those databases, and our archival database is yet another database. Our website uses yet another CMS system they built themselves. another problem, which I spoke about, is the fact that we have this nice file-based store going back to 2002, but there's no good way to get at it. As a matter of fact, when we do have to go back in there and get the stuff that's on the LTO tape, say there was a story that only went out on our first feed, sometimes we have two-hour shows that get a second feed, third feed for the different time zones, and sometimes the news changes, so we'll put in a new story. Generally, the archival one is the last one. So if we have to go back and get a story that we might not have on the CD, they go back into the LTO tapes that I've been keeping. And getting that stuff is a little bit of a science project, because every hour of every day of every individual show has a serial number. That's what Dalit gave it. And the best way to automate it, not make it too humanly intensive, is just to throw that stuff off to the tape. And I have it going back many years now, but you have to go to a lookup table, and this is a human doing this. We have not automated this. A human goes to the lookup table, says, oh, it was the third hour of morning edition from Wednesday the 23rd, and they look up the serial number, they restore the tape, they found what they want. So that's not good. The biggest problem here is that red circle, if you can see it, is the fact that most of what we have to gather and get back into the system and keep long term is recapturing the analog stream. But it's not just that it's recapturing the analog stream, but we're losing some of the metadata. There's too much going on there. So that's actually one of the biggest problems. Now, the solution that we came up with a while back and have been trying to implement is what we like to call a content lifecycle management system. This will be a completely integrated system where we take somebody coming up with an idea, I think we need to cover the ARSC convention. We're going to send a reporter out there and we're going to do a two-hour story on it. It's just the most fascinating thing going on. So somebody will come up with an idea, then they'll start assigning resources to it, and eventually we'll gather some sound, we'll gather raw materials, we'll produce the sound, we'll make a piece, we'll put it on the air, we'll put it on the web, we'll put it on a podcast. And at every step of the way, we use one database, so all the information just keeps aggregating and has certain standards in it and can be normalized, to use a different use of that term. And all the essence is coming out of what we call a hierarchical storage management system, which just looks like one nice file store to the users, whether it's raw material or produced material or material that we did 15 years ago and we don't really think it has much value and it got shuttled off to tape, which nowadays the LTO tape is about 18 cents per gigabyte, which is much cheaper than the 15,000 cycle per second fiber channel storage arrays that we use for production. I've done a nice little process flow kind of diagram of that same concept here, and I show it as a kind of an enterprise content production services bus, which we are actually building this now. It's not built on a service bus, but all that means really is that there's a standard way for information to flow from system to system. It doesn't really make sense to build one-size-fits-all database or system for every phase of that production. Our web people have their own CMS. Content production and archiving have very different uses. You need to build them differently. But there are very nice ways of doing data transformations and moving information from system to system. And all the essence can then live in an essence repository, be it just, you know, a lot of spinning disks, which are expensive, or, as mentioned before, a hierarchical storage management system. And I have the Born Analog little island off there in the lower left, showing that we will constantly continue to ingest our archival material, but put it into a system that has a little more smarts. And we came up with this concept originally. Well, I think I have some slides on our history now. So content lifecycle management, what is it? It's more than just simple digital asset management, because it keeps the idea of preservation, keeps the idea of integration completely in mind. There's a nice little catchphrase I've been very fond of since I first heard it years ago. Essence plus metadata equals an asset. People talk about digital asset management systems. There's been a lot of emphasis from the little I've seen of this conference on essence. Of course, preserving the essence. Without the essence, who cares? But the metadata is very, very important, because if you can't find your beautifully preserved essence, it's of no more value than if you didn't have it. As I showed in the previous slide, the idea is that you have workflow. You just keep an integrated system, you keep aggregating the metadata and keeping track of the essence from when you first come up with an idea to 32 years down the line when some great public figure dies and you've got to produce a nice obit. All right, so we came up with this idea a long, long time ago. I was hired by National Public Radio in the middle of their multi-user digital project, which they called MUD, to take charge of it, to go to all digital production. They started that in 1995. The idea is that we'd have central storage, a structured database for metadata. All the workstations would be networked and sharing central storage. And we completed the transition using a French company called Dalet, which is a very nice workflow system for radio production, in 2001. We started archiving to CD in 1995, at the same time. We dropped tape completely in 2002 for many reasons. One is that nobody asked for them, the equipment was hard to maintain, and all the equipment we still had on hand and cared to maintain was being used to ingest all the old archival material. And we started encoding for the web also in 1995. So anything that we put up at our website is, that's actually the best way to find the material. That's decimated, of course. It was originally just Windows Media. Then we added MP3s several years ago, and we're also doing Flash at this time. It's really the only digital archive at this time. We have very good text-based stuff that you can do science projects and find the essence, but mostly the web is the best way. So that's 1995 to about 2002. 2002 is when I started storing everything on LTO tape, with the idea being that that would eventually be married to a database. So our current production formats, we use linear PCM, MPEG 1, layer 2, at 384 kilobit per second. That's not likely to change anytime soon because that would be a huge financial change. But as disks come down and we refresh our storage, we do want to go to linear. So it's not only born digital, but it's born linear. Our web production uses the recaptured streams, and the archival tape is being transferred to CD, and our only real archival audio is on CD with just a text reference, just a link back. So we have CDs, tapes, files, and EDLs, and LTO tape as our archival formats, but there's no real direct link to any of that stuff. In 2000, we first decided that we'd build a digital asset management system, content lifecycle production, and we hired a company to help us put together an RFP. We sent the RFP. A lot of the main players in 2000, very few of whom exist anymore, responded. We picked a vendor, and we went to the board saying, this is really important. Everybody thinks the archives are important. Everybody thinks that we need to immediately move from production directly into archive. We have a system. We have a plan. And the board said, where's the business case? And we said, oops. So that didn't happen. That has since been made, and then credit default swaps got in the way. So we did make the business case. We did originally get the blessing to go ahead and build it. And we decided originally to build it ourselves, and as it turned out, we're going to do it anyway. So I spoke about some of the things that we did on the way to building it ourselves. We have the hierarchical storage management system with an LTO tape drive. We built our own content management system for the website. We started to see what it would take to stitch everything together. Here's our current state again. It shows that there's a lot of re-entering of metadata. There's a lot of re-encoding. It's basically just another view of some of the things I've been talking about. Everything is systems-based. It's not process-based. There's no persistent metadata. There's frequent re-entry. The archive system is text-based. I've spoken about that. And also retrieval of the born digital broadcast is a bit of a science project. I spoke about that. The first thing we did in building it ourselves is we built a metadata collector that we'd hoped could stitch everything together, and I'll go through this very quickly. That didn't work. So we partnered originally with somebody else. That didn't really work out. So we decided to build a complete workflow engine for content lifecycle management ourselves, and this is, and it's going along very nicely. So finally, I think we're going to get there, but we're still moving along. This is called Newsplex. I don't know how readable that is, but that shows the whole phase. It's based on web services. It's very lightweight. It enables us to stitch together the media. We're working with a company now called David Systems, which is based in Munich, Germany. They have a very nice on-air presentation system. We demonstrated that to our users by showing an on-air presentation and pulling the network plug out of the on-air workstation, and you couldn't hear a click or a glitch or anything. We like that. They have a nice editor, although their editor EDLs are in a proprietary digital format, not machine-readable, so we'll have to work with that, but we think we can. Everything else, pretty much building ourselves. And you see up in the upper right, there's where the essence will live, and we have various databases. So here's that life cycle management. This is the goal. We're not there. The system is not in use. And when it first goes into use, it will not have anything to do with the media production. That'll stay in its little islands, but it's pretty clear how we can stitch it together. And finally, the wheels are moving, and that's ultimately what that should look like. One of the things I circled in the what's wrong with this picture was that re-encoding of an analog stream to stitch everything together and to get it to the website, to get it to the archive. We did a lot of analysis while we were planning the previous slide, the nice newsplex, and we decided that that our library, the archive, what they want and what the website wants is pretty much the same thing. Not only that, but the shows, when they start putting the packages together for rebroadcast, that's also pretty much the same thing. So we decided that what had previously been done by three different groups in three different ways can usually be done once. And we can stitch together born live material, which is what's said live on air to introduce born digital playback. We can stitch that together just by keeping track of the playlists. So this is the kind of workflow that we worked out, where the playlist is the big block that has the metadata. First, we have a production database. Anything that gets broadcast to air gets re-recorded, and we can take out of that what we need, whether it makes the most sense to take out the whole piece or makes sense just to take what was born live and never existed digitally but now is digital and in the repository and stitch that together with the broadcast pieces. We have many different ways of doing it, and playlists are very easy to reference this material. And then it can move very quickly to the archive. So we've seen a prototype of the software for this, which is being built for us by David. It's really cool. You click a piece on the playlist, and it highlights the audio, or you highlight some audio, and it finds the playlist, and it marries it all back to the metadata. Still several months before we use this, but we will. This shows the great dream I've had since I started at NPR, that we can keep things digital, keep born digital in digital, have metadata married to the essence, which would be very nice in the system, where we have the databases. We have the production database, which only presents to people the information they need while they're producing. And after something has gone to air, we can keep it there for about a week, so everybody knows that the metadata and the essence is what they really want. Then it can move to an archive. Now, I mentioned that we have about 200,000 hours of raw materials, which there's value in that, but it's harder to ascertain than the material that we've broadcast. But we think there is value, and the people who gathered that sound know there's value, and now it exists as flash memory sticks and as many, many mini discs and as lots of CDs in discs all over the place. And it also exists as files that people have left in the production system, and every month or so we send out email notices, throw your stuff away. We can't keep everything forever. With this system, the idea is that we will be able to keep everything forever, or at least give the people the impression that we can. So the idea there is that we have a repository, which is not a production database. It's just anything that the archivist said, that's not good enough for our, we don't care about that. We can save all the metadata, and we can save the reference back in the hierarchical storage management system. We can save that so anybody can retrieve whatever they felt like they needed to keep forever. Now, what's wrong with this picture? When I was first asked to give this talk, I thought this was a pretty good system, and I was very happy that I was building it. But just being asked to come here and speak to this crowd, all of a sudden, I started having trouble sleeping at night because I decided that's something that's terribly wrong with this picture. That this may not have been such a great idea to begin with. The hierarchical storage management system requires this lovely and unfortunately expensive software from Tivoli called Tivoli Storage Management System. It's yet another format, yet another system that will change, that I have to worry about. Can my tapes continue to be read? This is not just a file that I can go back and get. I have a hard drive from 1989 that actually still powers up, and I can go back there and I can get audio projects from 1989. It's just a file system. It's an old Macintosh file system, but I can read it back. And it's not that hard to take a file and copy it to a new file system. My resume started life on an Apple II computer, and it just got copied and copied over and over. So that's something that I think is wrong with this system. So what are we going to do about it? Well, we're building a workflow system. It's called NewsPlex, and it will be able to let us aggregate all the metadata that we produce as we go through the production cycle. It will enable us to have direct links to the essence at every phase. It's a modern architecture. It's built on web services, data transformation services, and there are facilitates links to the web CMS and to the next generation of archive, whatever that may be. So we will be able to use the same system to go to the web. The web has the decimated audio. We can present that to users, and if somebody actually needs to reproduce, we can go to Essence at a higher quality, or even if it's MPEG and we want to keep it in MPEG for the very good reasons that Chris laid out. We have a hierarchical storage management system in place, but as I said, I'm beginning to question in my own mind just how wonderful that is. It's not yet linked to the workflow, as I mentioned, but that's just a matter of doing it. I don't think that's rocket science. And we've prototyped it many times, so we know how that's going to work. Tape, LTO tape, is still very, very cost effective. It's much less expensive than any kind of spinning disk, even cheap SATA disks. It's about 18 cents per gigabyte. And of course, all our spinning disks are RAID arrays. They're either RAID 1 plus 0, which sometimes called RAID 10, or RAID 5, which are very robust and can survive a lot of component failure and still run without any impact to the people who need to read the files. But LTO tape is still much cheaper. One nice thing that I get from Tivoli is that Tivoli has built into it constant data integrity checks. It looks at the files based on certain age. How long has it been in there? How long has it been sitting on that particular tape? And it'll grab the tape with the robotic arm and say, that's kind of old. I'm going to read that just because it's time to read it. I don't have to think about that. And it'll run a CRC and see if the data is really what it archived to begin with. But I can do that with spinning disk as well. So I'm beginning to think that this is my last generation of tape. Everything goes to spinning disk. And everything stays in a file system. But that's not where we are now. And I think totally consistent with what you've seen before, that regardless of everything else you've seen, regardless of everything else, the essence protection is only one thing to do, and that's constant migration. Up until the beginning of this century, audio archivists said, well, the way you archive audio is on quarter-inch tape, two-track tape, tails out. Not anymore. Now what you do is you have file integrity checks, and you constantly move it from one generation of storage to another generation of storage, and that's the only way you're going to protect your data. And that's how we're building this. So, thank you very much.